The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
You're on speakerphone now, aren't you?
I barely hear you.
You're on speakerphone, aren't you?
I just put myself on speakerphone.
Can totally tell.
You can totally tell.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Hold on. I'm going to close my office. I'm turning off my music.
Now it sounds like we really are live from Studio THX 1138 on Moose Maze Alpha.
Okay, how's that?
Yay!
Oh, perfect.
Oh, because you guys sound like crap. Sorry.
But that's every day.
Kaz, you're totally breaking up.
I know, you're not going to be able to hear me.
Oh, fabulous.
It's
and the just, other guys are jealous, right?
Just the way we like it.
Cut my finger.
Kaz, you're going to make Tom say that? No, don't.
Going to make me say what? No one's going to make me say anything.
Did you see what he wrote for you to say?
Yeah, when have I ever read anything that he writes for me?
You can read the same script he's typing?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, don't.
Okay.
So he's doing it in Google Docs, so even as he's typing, I'm seeing his changes.
Okay.
Okay, Kaz?
Yes?
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, are we recording?
Have been for 7 minutes now.
Oh, crap. I'm having a bad day. All right?
Go.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello there, this is Chad Snee. I'm the editor of Lynn Stamp News and the Scott Publishing Company, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Look at them, madam. Have you ever in your entire life seen anything so beautiful?
I'm sorry, I don't know anything about stamps.
This is the gentle art of philately, otherwise known as stamp collecting. Here's a pile of stamps carefully culled from swap meets and garage sales.
Rupert, what are you thinking of?
Oh, I was just thinking of all the years I wasted collecting stamps.
Oh, like stamp collecting. Now, that's all right. That's quite a nice hobby, that.
Yes, but it's not enough. Don't you understand? I'm lonely. I'm so terribly lonely.
All right, Homer. You beat those stamp Nazis with good old-fashioned American complaining.
Homer, if it weren't for you, we'd be at the mercy of weekend philatelists.
You know, why didn't you just say stamp collectors?
Because I'm tired of dumbing myself down for you.
From Spain and two from Japan, I got a couple from Israel and Azerbaijan. I got a plenty from Poland, but none from Sudan or from Fiji or Uzbekistan.
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Live from Studio THX 1138 on Moonbase Alpha, this is Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 134.
I'm Kaz. I got food poisoning today. I don't know when I'm going to use it, though.
Wow, you got an ugh even in your intro. This is Tom, and there again once a... As always, there's no way I'm reading what Kaz wrote for me because it's terrible. Let's just say Kaz doesn't take baths, though.
I'm Jim Forty. I'm a postal history dealer in Las Vegas, Nevada.
I'm Jim Capel, club president of a local club in Las Vegas, Nevada.
And I'm your stamp mistress, Dawn. I saw this thing in a cartoon, so I think I can do it. This day in history, August 1st. 1936 was the opening of the 1936 Olympics in Berlin. There are many stamps of this, and we have special guest Jim Forty on. Jim, what do you have?
I brought with me a range of postal history from the 1936 Olympics, primarily the Summer Olympics, with cancels from the various venues at the Olympics and events, competitions during the Olympics, some picture postcards, some slogan cancels, And I also bought an interesting book, Philately of the Third Reich. Propaganda was very, very important to the Third Reich, and it was certainly used in philately, and it shows the different cancels and to some extent the stamps that were issued as well as the propaganda cards, and it's just a fascinating way to look at what was happening.
What's the title of the book? So people, because there's no way we can hold it up to the microphone.
The book is entitled Philately of the Third Reich by a gentleman named Alf Harper, H-A-R-P-E-R. I believe that you can get this in a PDF on eBay these days. This is an old-fashioned paper book, but I do believe you can still, this has been PDF'd and you can get one online in that manner. And, it's very useful for, being able to read the Gothic German, because the cancels aren't always easiest to read if you're not familiar with the script, and they give some of the thought and the ideas behind the various events that were being being commemorated.
Yeah, so everybody, this is the 1936 Olympics. This is with Adolf Hitler and the Spanish boycotting it and the Russians boycotting it and Jesse Owens running all over the place. And by the way, he wasn't snubbed by... Adolf Hitler, was he, James?
No. I'm typing you a note.
You even had a little story about that one.
Yeah. The common belief was that he was snubbed by Hitler, but Jesse relates a story that he walked by and he waved his hand at me and I waved back. He didn't snub, but it was FDR that snubbed him. The president didn't even send him a telegram.
Yeah, I heard about that one too.
Yeah. Hitler was criticized for this, and the Olympic Committee insisted he was to meet and greet all the medalists, or none at all. So Hitler didn't go to any of the medal presentations, and which followed include one after Jesse Owens won his four medals. He met with the German winners outside the stadium afterwards.
But FDR didn't.
FDR didn't even acknowledge that we went to the Olympics.
Yeah.
Happens.
Well, the Olympics started, August 1st, and today is August 3rd, so we're almost celebrating whatever the math is on that. I think that's the 260th anniversary or something like that. My math might be off.
But, just a bit.
So what do you have that's neat? And I'll take a picture of it, and I'll put it on Facebook so that people can see what we're talking about.
Well, I've got a pretty good range of things here. Most of them are event covers commemorative cancels for the different events that happened. Most of them are franked with the stamps that were issued. There was two series of semi-postal stamps, one issued for the Winter Olympics in Garmisch-Partenkirch, and then the second one
What?
Garmisch-Partenkirch. I'm not that good pronouncing German. Garmisch. It's south of Munich in the Alps.
Okay.
Okay. If you're ever driving from Munich and driving to Innsbruck, it's about halfway. At any rate, there was a set of three semi-postal stamps issued for the Winter Olympics and a longer set for the Summer Olympics. The stamps are not particularly scarce or rare. There's a premium for Never Hinged, as with most German from this times. But these are all covers. Some of them are on postcards of events. They're also issued postal stationery. They issued postal stationery in the domestic rate of 6 pfennigs and the international rate of 15 pfennigs. There were also slogan cancels, which were issued to promote the games ahead of time. There were a range of those. Now, some other things which I don't happen to have with me because I don't have...
Oh, hold on. Go back.
Okay.
I like that one.
Yeah,
I'm going to put that one on Facebook.
Okay, good. Yeah, this is what Kaz is talking about. This is a colorful picture postcard of the Olympic Stadium. Most of the other postcards are real photos. Is not nearly so colorful. And there were the stationery encompasses both the stadium and some of the different events. I mean, there's registered items. There's items going overseas. Here's one with the brown derby souvenir sheet canceled at an Olympic venue. Now, unfortunately,
the horse one, right?
Yeah. There were almost every year. I believe it was in Munich. There was a brown derby race, and they issued a stamp, and a couple of them were souvenir sheets. Now, a couple of very interesting things, which I unfortunately don't have, is that there was a commemorative flight of the Hindenburg. Now, the Hindenburg was the second major German Zeppelin, the first being the Graf Zeppelin. Most of the Graf Zeppelin's flights were commemorative and special in nature, primarily for philatelists. But the Hindenburg actually carried a lot of mail. They made, in 36, I believe, 10 flights to North America, and I think maybe a 10 or 12 going to South America. And much of that mail is commercial. You need to know. You need to look at the markings of the covers, the dates, just to tell whether it went on the Zeppelin. But there was this, the Olympic flight, which was much like the Graf Zeppelin flights, didn't particularly carry a lot of mail except for collectors. And those are pretty desirable. They're usually franked with the souvenir sheets with this from the stamps. I don't happen to have any of those with me.
Now, this is the souvenir sheet with the four stamps on it?
Yeah, off the top of my head, I can't remember the number of stamps. But I think there were two or three different souvenir sheets, yeah. And they contained, you know, various stamps from the set. And also one of the nicer cantles to get are the ones that were from the Olympic Village. The German word for that is Dorf, D-O-R-F, and don't happen to have any of those now. But, you know, and during the Third Reich, you can find an absolute myriad of covers that show the stamps that were issued for propaganda purposes, the cantles that were issued for propaganda purposes, often combined thereof, the stationery. There were picture postcards with franking and post, and also as postal stationery with franking. It was a part of the regime.
I have a question for Jim. I've packed up all my stuff to move, so I couldn't bring this cover. Cancellation I have for the Olympics. I'm swearing that I do have one that has a swastika eagle.
Yeah, there's definitely one like that. You know, frankly, a lot of German cantles have swastikas,
yeah.
And frankly, most of the stationery has. Well, not all of it, but I mean, a lot of the stamps have swastikas. There's not as many on the Olympic things. You know, I mean, again, what you can do is if you want to take a moment and go through the book, this shows the primary cancels.
Yeah, hold it up to the microphone so everybody can see it.
Yeah, there
yeah,
you go.
There
I mean,
is.
You can. But the point of it is that that's not uncommon. Absolutely not uncommon to see swastikas, and I get, but there were fewer on the Olympic stuff than on other things.
Yeah,
well, they were being boycotted for everything. You know, it was kind of the last minute that the United States said they were going to do it, and when the United States said yes, then everybody did, except for Russia and Spain.
And the United States also backed down on two people running in the Olympics because they were Jewish. Another appeasement to another nation that didn't work.
What was that about?
It was the sprinters, American Jewish sprinter Sam Stroller and Marty Glickman. And they were the only two Jewish Olympic team members that were pulled by the American Olympic Committee from the 4x100 relay race on the speculation that they would embarrass Hitler by having two Jewish win gold medals.
Oh, heaven forbid.
And they were pulled from the race.
If you were a subscriber to Home Box Office HBO, there was a documentary on Marty Glickman which goes into this. Now, Marty Glickman was a sportscaster, and he was the play-by-play man for the New York Football Giants in the 60s and 70s. So, you know, somebody that if you grew up in that time in that area, you would certainly remember. But it goes through the entire process of him going out there and literally being pulled at the last minute.
Mm.
And there was another sort of famous person who did compete. His last name was Zamparelli, and he was the subject of the book Unbroken. During World War II, he was the navigator of a B-24 that crashed, and he and two other crewmen were on a raft for weeks and weeks, and he was eventually taken out of the water by the Japanese and spent a lot of years in a prisoner of war camp, and he passed away only a year or two ago in his mid-90s.
There was a female that was Jewish female, runner, I believe, that was boycotted by the German racing group that was sending people to the Olympics. She died this year or two also, and I forget her name, But there was, she was Jewish and German, and they wouldn't let her run because of that.
So let's go out on a limb here and say that Germany didn't like Jewish people. Is that a fair statement?
You might want to...
Adolf Hitler didn't like Jewish people.
And Goering didn't. But well, the people did. They liked them.
One of the interesting things I thought was that the number two... this was held in Berlin. The second option, or the second city that was competing, was Barcelona, Spain. Hmm. And they got angry that they lost, so they boycotted the Berlin Olympics and were going to put on their own Olympics. And what happened is the day before their Olympic Games started, they declared war on themselves and started the Spanish Civil War.
Yes.
Now, the Russians didn't compete either. And
they were going to Spain.
Yeah, they were going to go to Spain. A lot of them were going to Spain. As a matter of fact, when the Civil War started up, a bunch of people all of a sudden said, "Ooh, I'm getting the heck out of here." And a lot of people who were in Spain left.
This is the first games that were televised, but they were televised kind of like closed circuit in the post office in Germany and Potsdam. Mm. You know, so Americans weren't the first with TV.
Okay.
You know, and it's also the level of philatelic collectibles created, really, you know, this was the first time, and really that wasn't done again until quite some time later. Really, you're not going to see anything like this kind of quantity of philatelic collectibles until Australia in 1956. So it's, in 1940, the Olympics were scheduled for Helsinki, but there was this little world war that got in the way.
Yeah.
I don't know if they even scheduled anything for 44. In 48, they were in London. And, gosh, 52. Where were they in 52 anyway?
I don't know. They were in Mexico in 64.
No, 68. 64 was Tokyo.
Oh, yeah, that is correct.
Yeah. So, but...
Jim, yes. You have a lot of stuff there. Why don't you tell everybody why you have all this stuff?
Well, I am a dealer in U.S. and worldwide postal history. I have what is undoubtedly the largest site with offering worldwide postal history in the world, postalhistory.com, all is one word.
I got to fact check that. I don't know.
Spelled just like it sounds. I've got 230,000 items available.
I think somebody else has 231.
I don't think so. And I also have a smaller site called stamps-plus.com, which offers the stamps when they're not on the envelopes.
Ah.
32,000 items.
Was it 56 you were talking about for where they were?
Yeah.
Melbourne, Australia.
Oh, 50, yeah, I knew that 50s. But where was 52? Maybe 52. That was Helsinki. Maybe they finally gave them to Finland in 52. I think they did.
52, yeah, Helsinki,
yeah,
Finland.
Yeah, they got them when they lost them in 1940. Yeah.
In 1932, it was in L.A., and you had a whole bunch of stamps for that coming out.
Well, there were two U.S. stamps, but there were not commemorative cancels. There were covers you can find, and people that collect postal history of the Olympics look for things that were, what they wind up having to get before 1936 are things that were canceled in the place of the Olympics and hopefully on a day where an event was happening. So they issued stamps, but, the concept of covers and propaganda, that was definitely a German invention.
I want to share something, too, because you brought up earlier about the Zeppelin flights and telling the dates and stuff like that. The listeners probably know, but just in case you didn't, Germany does not have, like, the month, then the day, then the year. They don't go July 4th, 1776. They would have said 4th July, 1776.
Only the United States... Well, I can't say only, but primarily the United States uses month, day, year. Maybe Canada, but it's pretty uncommon.
No, Canada goes... So, yeah, Canada... I'm Canadian grandmother. She wrote, taught me to write the European way.
Back to Moonbase Alpha.
You need to tie the string between the tin cans a little tighter.
Well, here's something that a lot of people didn't know. Like, we put our month in the beginning, and so they're out of order. And they call that Big Indian, where you have the big, or you don't have the smallest going to the largest. You have, instead of day, month, year, you have month, day, year. And they call that Big Indian. And I always thought that was interesting. And you also have Little Indian if you do it the other way. That came from
Gulliver's Travels.
Not Gullible's Travels.
Yeah. That came from Gulliver's Travels. And there was a war in Lilliput where the king said everybody has to open their eggs on the little end. And the people who followed the king were Little Indians. And the people who didn't follow the king are the Big Indians. And so what they, science took that and they now say that we're a middle Indian, where we put the middle date on one of the ends. So when we do July 1st, 1925, we're being a middle Indian. And so when people read the German covers, you have to remember they go day, month, year, not month, day, year. And I know a lot of people who have screwed up on first day covers and event covers and stuff. They submit them and go, look at this. This was canceled on the day, I don't know, Hitler was assassinated. And you go, no, this was actually 6 months before, because you have to reverse the day in the month. So anything else on Olympics or Germany in general, other than bashing Hitler for being a really creep?
No, no one was bashing Hitler. Everybody loves Hitler, right?
No, not really. Not really.
Certainly, all I can think of now is one little, two little, three little Indians.
It's actually interesting. Over the years when I've traveled to Germany, the two things that Germans didn't much collect in Germany, the inflation era and the Third Reich, but as time has gone on, they are now avidly collecting both those areas.
Well, I love the inflation area. I mean, I'm an economist at heart, and I just love the whole idea of economic breakdown and stuff like that.
My last little factoid that I looked up and found was basketball was added to the program for the 1936 Olympics. In the final game, the United States beat Canada 19-8. The contest was played outdoors on a dirt court in a driving rain. Because of this, the teams could not dribble, so the scores were minimal. Minimal.
I was going to say, how'd you get 19-8 in a basketball game?
Well,
sounds like
Dean's
5 year olds.
Four corners.
Well, I do know, like, 3 years later, there was a lot of fouling going on by the Germans basketball.
Okay. Hey, you know, there was something you missed in this day in history, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, August 1st in 1900. You were born.
That is true. That is true. And thank you, everybody, who wished me a happy birthday on Facebook.
Yeah, we were at dinner yesterday, and he kept claiming it was his birthday yesterday. Like, no, the day before.
We get emails, so summon the answer squad. And we got an email from Mike Key who says, hello, Cash.
Hello.
Many thanks for entertaining my question on the podcast. I have a question that you might be able to answer. What is the best way to trade my duplicate stamps? I don't know any collectors to trade with directly. I'm wary of using online forums, but I might not know about the best one. I don't have time or valuable enough stamps to create an eBay or Hip Stamp account for selling them. I'm thinking that a local stamp club might be the way to go. I doubt a dealer would be interested in my low-value dupes. Perhaps you have a suggestion. If not, I understand. Many thanks.
Well, we actually have a president of stamp club here. So, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about how people trade at a stamp club?
Well, we have what is called, and is misnamed, a nickel night. You bring in your extra stamps, sell them for a nickel. But as I said, it's misnamed because I bought a large Cambodian collection for $500. That's not a nickel. And then we have a couple of members that have prices, fair market price, listed in their books. So Nickel Night is a misnomer. We have a Boy Scout program that we get a lot of donations for. So what we've been doing the last few Nickel Nights is bringing in a 20-gallon tub of stamps on paper, off paper, and laying it out on one of the tables. And we'll turn around and say, okay, anything on paper, 2 for $1. So you're getting 2 stamps for a nickel. And also I asked the members to look for things that wouldn't be really appropriate to give to a Boy Scout. And if they find them, give them to me or keep them. Because I don't want to get in trouble with the Boy Scouts.
Not appropriate? Like what?
Nude stamps.
How would that be not appropriate? I think that would be a high in demand item there.
We have a lot of Boy Scouts and church groups around here that wouldn't really fly good.
I don't know. There's a lot of religious statues you can have that are naked.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. If the church groups around here had statues on stamps, more power to them.
So is this common? Like, because I've been to several stamps. Everybody's tired of hearing me talk. I go to stamp clubs all the time. We always buy, sell, trade stuff. You know, it's low quality stuff. It's stuff like it sounds like this fellow has. And, you know, it sells.
Well, we do three auctions a year. We try. And the members can sell anything they want at those auctions. And the club only gets 10% of the final bid price, and the member gets the balance. As I say, you could have anything you want stamp-related in there. I've done some very good volume buying. Matter of fact, my box lots have been bought there a few times. You know, that's one way of getting rid of the excess stamps, is donate them to a non-charitable Boy Scout group.
Yeah,
church group or anybody.
I think the fellow is writing, though, and saying, either I want money or I want more stamps.
Well, there's a trading thing.
That's a little different there. You know, you could always give stamps away.
We have a couple of members we have one member in Australia and one in Costa Rica. But the one in Australia has done pen pal programs with people where he'll line up a collector in Australia who wants American stamps, and they'll trade back and forth.
Mm.
You know, that's another way of pen-palling them.
Jim, how about the last sentence?
Well,
I doubt a dealer would be interested in any of my low-value dupes.
Well, I mean, to specifically answer the question, I think going to a stamp club, you might find someone who would be interested in trading, but more realistically, you really should look into either perhaps in a Linz classified. I don't think the APS has much in trading, or there are exchange groups online. It's basically you send 100 stamps and you get 100 stamps. Now, there's a possibility that you can send 100 stamps and get nothing. I don't think that's terribly likely. You might not like what you get, but then you do it again with someone else. Mm. And that probably is the best way.
Well, also, you have APS circuit books.
Well, that gets into buying and selling. That's more complicated.
Yeah.
On your comment that there's no scams out there, we have received about 2 requests a month for exchange people, and we have come across a couple that, you know, the people send out stamps, get nothing back, and the same person will write us again, not knowing they've already written us and requesting exchange.
Well, that can certainly,
it does happen.
That can certainly happen. I mean, I know that I get emails from people wanting me to send them printed catalogs using high-value stamps.
Mm-hmm.
I don't usually bother.
Yeah.
Well, there was that story about the Nigerian prince who has been emailing people for like the last 10 years trying to give away his millions, and he finally died. And they went into his apartment, and he literally just had stacks of money and said, nobody was returning my emails.
Oh, we're the crickets.
Anything else? Is this the petering out section of the show?
No, I'm going to advertise my club.
Okay, why don't you give your club a plug? Tell people how to get in touch with it, what your website is, stuff like that.
Okay. Southern Nevada Stamp Club is an APS charter club. We're in Las Vegas. We cover members from Australia, Costa Rica, Germany. The dues are only $10 a year. Our main funding comes from auctions. And we have a mini auction every meeting where club members will donate their duplicate stamps, their excess stamps. Okay, the address of the meeting is Acadia Springs Independent Assisted Living Facility, located at 8630 West Navos. I'm going to spell that. N-E-V-S-O, Drive, Las Vegas.
So you have a really young, spry group there.
Younger than the rest.
The assisted living facility.
And they're going to be moving to a funeral home soon. They're going to save somebody a lot of money on transportation costs one day.
We are planning on moving to a Saturday meeting format. So our email address is southernnevadastampclub@gmail.com. If you go to the APS site, click on the left-hand side on clubs, local clubs, and by state, we're the second one listed. Actually, we've got about 68 members now, and we're quietly growing.
All right, Jim, why don't you give yourself one last plug, too?
I am a postal history dealer as well as a stamp dealer. I do have an office in Las Vegas, 8919 West Sahara, Suite 140. If you're ever in Las Vegas, you're welcome to come on by. Lots of stuff to look at, more than you could imagine. We're generally there from 10 to 4. Just give us a call, 702-222-0355. And if you like doing things on the internet, you will find more covers than you can possibly imagine at postalhistory.com. And about 32,000 stamps at stamps-plus.com.
Tom, you got anything to plug?
No. Nope. Nothing for me to plug today.
Nothing? Not any pin trading or anything?
No, I'm so far out of the pin trading business. I have a pin collection now. It's no longer trading.
Well, Saturday I'll be at the Arcadia Stamp Show walking around saying hi to people. But that's no biggie because I'm there every month.
That's true.
End abruptly?
I think you just did.
Okay.
Thank you for joining us. This has been Cash, Scott, Tom, and I'm your host, Dawn. Continue the conversation at Stamp Show Here Today on Facebook. You can ask us questions, see pictures of the stamps, make comments, and add to the conversation on Facebook. You can also ask the experts your stamp questions at bluepaper@gradingmatters.com. You can listen to all of our past podcasts at stampshowheretoday.com, podbean.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast listening platform. And as always, keep collecting.
WC Stamps offers premium U.S. classic and rare stamps on eBay. They make sure that 90% of their inventory is always the lowest price listed. They also accept the best offers. Just search WC Stamps, all one word, on eBay. Thank you for your support of the show.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurse, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.
Hi, this is Bob Prager with Gary Poser Incorporated, and we're in Long Island, New York, in New Jersey, and our philosophy at Gary Poser Incorporated is this. We would rather pay very fair prices on 9 out of 10 collections that we look at versus trying to just offer very low prices on 1 out of 2 and making a big score. That's never our philosophy. So if you want to be treated fairly, please give us a call anytime at 800-323-4279, and again, my name is Bob Prager.